This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today's topic is Keynesian stimulus.
Today's topic is mackerel.
Oh, mackerel economics.
Mackerel economics. What would that be? It sounds like a... it's like macroeconomics.
Right. So it would be the economics of, like, international fishery management.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Funny answer, huh?
Wow. You should be a comedian. Woo! Okay, so we're talking about mackerel today. I'm kind of surprised. Well, as with many episodes, I'm feeling surprised that it's taken us this long to get to this one.
Well, to be fair, we did an episode called Unpopular Fish. It was our first episode with a guest, Becky Selinget.
That was like 9 years ago.
I think it was episode 6.
Wow.
Seriously.
Okay.
And we talked some about mackerel on that episode. Probably. I certainly didn't go back and listen to it because...
Me neither.
Yeah.
Anyway, mackerel shows up particularly in a lot of Japanese preparations.
That's mostly what I'm going to be talking about because that's mostly what I know about.
And given your relationship with Japan... Your relationship. Have you guys had a DTR yet?
Oh, we really should.
Yeah. Anyway, you and the people of Japan.
I think
it could be a referendum.
There could be a referendum. I think if there was a referendum, I would get voted out somehow.
Probably. Anyway, yeah.
Like, this guy just isn't doing it for us anymore.
Given your relationship to Japan, I'm very surprised it's taken us this long to talk about mackerel.
Yeah. Do you have any mackerel memory lane?
I have zero mackerel memory. Oh, wait a minute. The one memory lane I have, and I was initially thinking this doesn't qualify as memory lane because it's too recent, but then I realized, Matthew... that what I'm remembering took place in 2005.
Oh, that counts.
That
for
was
sure.
15 years ago.
That so ancient times.
I dated this guy when I was in grad school. I dated him for like 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
He broke up with me, I think. Yeah, I think.
If you can't remember for sure, that's probably... That's a good way to leave things, I
right?
think.
At the time, I was heartbroken. He was really attractive. And I had been warned...
Oh, no.
I had been warned that he was slightly bad news and that he really only... This is terrible. That he was one of those white guys who only dates Asian women.
Okay.
And clearly, I'm not Asian.
Mm-hmm. I think we may have talked about this before.
I think we may have. Anyway, but what I remember is that at some point after we had broken up... It feels weird to even say break up when you've been, like, dating for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I understand.
Anyway, after we had stopped dating, at some point after that, when I was still feeling sort of strangely heartbroken by this, we went out for sushi, and he knew way more about sushi than I did because...
That sounds like a fun date.
He had been married to a Japanese woman, and he learned a tremendous amount about sushi being in Japan with her family.
So this date was like, let me tell you how to eat sushi using knowledge I get from my Japanese ex-wife, who I'm going to talk about a lot.
Yeah, basically.
This sounds like the best date ever.
Exactly.
I wish I could have been like at the table next to yours.
Anyway, that was the first time I ever had mackerel in a sushi restaurant. And it may be the first time that I ever actually had mackerel was with that dude.
Oh, and yet you still like it.
And I still like it.
I'm glad that that guy couldn't ruin mackerel for you because it's a great fish.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, the good news is I think he was just going through a hard time.
I think that seems very generous of you.
I think he vaguely got his shit together.
Okay, good.
I mean, it's arguable whether I got my shit together.
Have you been? I think you have. Have you been stalking him on Facebook? Is that why
you
know?
We're friends on Facebook. Oh, okay, great. We're friends on Facebook.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He sometimes sends you sushi tips, right?
Yeah, he loves to tell me stories about his old mother-in-law.
I feel like I'm trying to ask myself, like, am I really any better than this guy? Because, like, I definitely mansplain things. And also, I feel like I'm like a white guy who only has relationships with Asian countries. And maybe that's just as bad.
I mean, I think we could discuss this.
Yeah, it would be very funny. Again.
Ha ha. Oh, mackerel economics.
Okay, anyway. So I think the first time I had mackerel was maybe about the same time, maybe 2005? A little earlier than
Did
that.
Did you date that guy too?
I mean, like, it's so hard to remember. Like, things got pretty crazy in the aughts.
Yeah. You and Lori were probably experiencing like the 7-year itch around that point.
Yeah, right? Or like the 10-year, yeah.
Wait, had you been married 10 years? No, you didn't get married in 1995.
I mean, we got married in 96.
Oh! And we got together
in 95.
Wait a minute. Did you guys? I thought you were like 20 when you got married. You were 21.
No, I was 20. I was going to turn 21 later that year. And in fact, I did.
I still can't believe you guys got married when you were 20.
I know. If you're listening, don't do that.
But you guys have like made it work and you still like each other and
okay,
stuff.
Okay. If you're listening, do that. Okay. I don't know what the lesson here is.
Is Lori,
I think the lesson is do as I do, not as I don't.
Is Lori okay with the relationships you keep having with various countries in Asia?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think yes, but I think she would really enjoy going to Europe at some point. And I'm always like, cool, let's go back to Japan. So,
I recently watched Marriage Story, the Noah Baumbach movie that was nominated for a bunch of Oscars.
I've heard of it, but have not seen it.
In it, the wife, you know, as part of their divorce, is citing this complaint that she always wanted to live in L.A. They lived in New York, and her husband just kept putting it off and putting it off. And now mm-hmm. they're going through a divorce in the movie. So, Matthew, maybe you should, like, take a... a tip here from Scarlett Johansson. And like, if your wife says she wants to go to Europe, like, take her to Europe.
Okay.
Or you're going to wind up in a Noah Baumbach movie.
Message received. I'm taking Scarlett Johansson to Europe.
You are going to wind up like Adam Driver.
But I mean, but she hangs out in Tokyo also in that.
Oh, yeah, that's
other
true.
Movie.
She gets to hang out with
Wait,
Bill Murray.
I'm going to end up like Adam Driver
that's
if I don't change my ways.
That's a good problem to
I
have,
mean,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I could handle that.
Okay. Anyway. All right.
All right. So I think the first time I had mackerel was at a restaurant now sadly closed for many years called Takohachi in the International District in Seattle. Probably someone on eGullet, the food message board that we both used to frequent.
I think it's technically where we met.
I think
really.
It's where we met. Said that Takohachi was a great restaurant and you should go for lunch and get the Saba Shioyaki, which is salt broiled mackerel lunch set. Mm-hmm. And so I went and I did that and it was so good.
Is this the place that it's in the ID and it was like one block off of Jackson?
No, it's right on Jackson.
Okay. Okay.
It is now a restaurant called Kaname,
okay,
which is also good, but it's kind of a different kind of place. And it had like a octopus, like a light up octopus sign outside. Mm-hmm. And now like the octopus sign and one of the booths from the restaurant are like a permanent exhibit at the Kobo like houseware store
on
the next block. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But you cannot sit in the booth and get food because it's no longer a restaurant.
Okay.
Anyway, so salt grilled mackerel, we're going to talk about more about it, but it is so simple. It's like mackerel that's been salted and broiled. And that's it. Like, mackerel is, like, I remember, I eating it probably for the first time, like, every time I eat it, the adjective that jumps to mind is juicy.
Yes.
Because it is
very
such
juicy.
An oily fish, but oily is not, doesn't have a very positive connotation to it.
No. And, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of people, I think that people are often a little bit put off by mackerel because it is, because like many oily fishes, it is thought to be very like pungent,
yeah,
smelly. It's not that it's not those things.
Yeah, but.
But I feel like, in truth, at least the one that we ate today was no more pungent than a piece of salmon.
Right, which is also an oil. It's funny how we describe.
It's also an oily fish.
Like you wouldn't describe a marbled steak as oily, even though
right.
it is in the same sense that a oily fish is oily.
Right.
I mean, I guess the fat in a fish has a lower melting point, but still, I mean.
Also, there are plenty of pungent fishes that we prize. Like the anchovy has had a real comeback
yeah.
in American cooking lately.
I'm gonna try and work this into conversation that I could go for like a nice oily steak.
It just doesn't sound right.
Right. So why like denigrate a fish that way? Why denigrate
why
a fish?
Why you've had to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, Matthew, would you tell me about what mackerel is? Because
okay.
for one thing, well, I don't know.
For one thing, I don't know either. But so mackerel is a name, like, you know, we always run into this both with plants and animals, that there's like a common name that actually gets stuck to a whole bunch of different unrelated things. But mackerel basically is a very common fish. And the one we're going to focus on is the Atlantic mackerel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like things that are like Spanish mackerel, horse mackerel. Those are kind of more distantly related. Also, I mean, also certainly good.
Do they taste remotely like Atlantic mackerel?
Remotely, yes. They're also like an oily fish.
Okay.
And then there's king mackerel. Which,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Can we just dive into this? Because I'm getting overwhelmed.
Yes, we can dive into it like a fish diving into the ocean from not.
So, okay, hold on. So mackerel is like a really beautiful fish.
Yeah, it's silver. It's striped.
And it's like, very, it looks very streamlined.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of like if you had a kid draw a fish. It would look kind of like a mackerel, I
exactly.
think.
It's sort of like from the side, it's like an elongated almond shape.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally true.
Whereas some fish, like, you know, salmon or whatever, some salmon have, like, they just don't have that, like, perfect almond shape.
Right. And it's a plump fish. It's got a roundness to it.
Mm-hmm. It's really kind of cute.
Yes. And, yeah, so we said, like, you know, it's people kind of balk at it because it seems oily and smelly, but, like, and that's not true, but, like, so, like, you know, stinky cheeses, like, those are great, too.
Also, I think so much of this is how it has been kept from the moment that it was pulled out of the ocean
right.
until it arrives on your plate. Because, for instance, you know, here in Seattle, like, we eat a lot of salmon, and I try to eat them especially when they are, like, coming in
right.
fresh. However, I bought some previously frozen wild sockeye at the grocery store recently, and I usually don't have a problem with previously frozen fish.
Uh-huh.
However, I was very aware of how much fishier it tasted.
Yeah, it does.
And so, yeah, I think that we have to keep in mind that, like, what we attribute to these fish as, like, inherent properties to them are sometimes what's happened to them when they aren't the freshest or when they've been around for a while sitting in a freezer or...
Right. And also, and this is going to be, like, super fucking funny, like, there's also, like class and race layers involved because, you know, mackerel is a cheap fish
yeah.
and salmon is an expensive fish. And
so
you know,
we're all like, ooh, right. I love oily salmon.
Right.
In fact, like, the oiliest Copper River salmon is so
yes,
expensive.
I know. It's like $37 or something.
And that stuff, I mean, it's almost like frying bacon.
Yeah, it's good,
so
though.
Fatty. It's so good. Anyway.
So one other thing I want to get out of the way is that you have probably heard warnings about mercury and mackerel. And those apply to king mackerel, which is like a big ass top of the food chain mackerel that I don't remember ever having seen for sale on, at least, you know, fish is like much more regional still than other foods. And there are like fish that are common on the East Coast that we don't get much on the West Coast. So maybe on the East Coast of the U.S., you're getting king mackerel, maybe other parts of the world. I have never seen king mackerel in Seattle. Atlantic mackerel is low in mercury. Don't worry about it.
Cool. Okay. Tell me more.
I found this on Wikipedia. Like I did a bit of a mackerel deep dive. No pun intended. When feeding on larger prey, schools tend to break down into shoals and individuals find food on their own. When consuming plankton, however, Atlantic mackerel form tight aggregations, open their mouths as wide as possible, and extend their operculums, swimming in a tightly packed school that acts like a series of miniature tow nets.
That's so cool.
Wouldn't it be great if we could do that?
What kind of food would you want to do? Well, it would need to be something flying through the air.
Well, so pretty much bugs, right?
Unless we live in like cloudy with a chance of meatballs.
Right. So maybe we could do this underwater. Like we could have meatballs floating in a swimming pool. Okay.
Oh, that's bobbing for apples.
You're all invited to my party. We're going to fill my swimming pool with meatballs and apples.
By his swimming pool, he means his bathtub.
Right, because I do not have a swimming pool or a yard. But we're going to fill the swimming pool with meatballs. You're all going to come over. We're going to join hands and form,
I think it's more
a
like
toe net?
I think it's more like we're going to go cheek to cheek.
We're going to go cheek to cheek. We're going to open our mouths as wide as possible. So basically forming like one communal mouth. Of all spilled milk listeners together.
This sounds very sexy.
Forming one communal mouth. Yeah, this just was
this
my kind
like
of
somebody's
eyes wide
like
shut.
weird fantasy.
Yeah,
of the communal mouth.
It's.
I want the communal mouth on my body.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, episode's canceled.
Okay. All right. Tell me more.
Okay. So, still according to Wikipedia, historically in England, I feel like this is going to keep coming up. There's many like traditional ways to cook mackerel in various European cuisines, including, of course, Norway, but also a lot in England that I don't know a whole lot about. And I'm hoping listeners will be able to chime in. Okay, but historically in England, this fish was not preserved, but was consumed only in its fresh form. However, spoilage was common, leading the authors of the Cambridge Economic History of Europe, hey, we're back to mackerel economics, to remark, there are more references to stinking mackerel in English literature than to any other fish.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. We've all been wondering, like, which fish
had been referenced most in English literature?
Well, like, in its stinking state.
Oh, okay.
This episode is brought to you by MasterClass.
Matthew, take a minute and picture that thing that you've always wanted to learn.
All right, I'm picturing the thing.
Okay.
And you know, what if I get lost in the wilderness?
Well, okay, this is the thing?
This is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so picture learning it from someone who's literally the best at getting lost in the wilderness.
No.
In the world.
You don't understand, Molly. I want to get found in the wilderness.
Oh, okay.
So, and for that, I turn to Jesse Krebs, who is an internationally recognized expert on wilderness survival. She has a class on MasterClass, and she teaches like the five basic needs. And if you think number one is water, you're wrong. She teaches you how to use a knife, how to use rope, one of your most important tools in the wilderness. I don't think I'm going to get stuck in the wilderness, but if I do, I'm going to be really happy that I took this class on MasterClass.
Yeah, well, MasterClass is where you should go if you don't just want to think about learning something, but you actually want to do it with one-on-one classes with the world's best.
Yeah, if you want to learn singing from Christina Aguilera, if you want to learn shooting threes from Steph Curry, there's only one place in the world to do those things, unless you happen to know those people, which you don't.
Yeah, you don't. And every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. With blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar. Discover legendary tastes with America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
So how do you buy it? The thing that I notice is that a typical like mainstream American grocery store doesn't have mackerel.
Have it.
And is that because of these like race and class issues, do you think?
No, I think it's more like regional fishery issues because it's an Atlantic fish, and we do, you know, there is, you know, salmon is super, super popular, and so there is a whole like distribution system set up to get Atlantic salmon, well, I mean, which is farmed anyway, to the West Coast. But like for a fish where there isn't as much demand, like mackerel, no one's going to go to a lot of trouble to get a fresh mackerel from the Atlantic to Seattle.
Yeah.
When we've got lots of other fish here.
Have you noticed going, well, I mean, how often do you go into like a mainstream grocery store on the East Coast?
All the time. How often do I go? I thought you were just going to ask me, how often do I go to the supermarket?
No, every day. I was going to ask, like, I would be curious to hear from any listeners who live on the East Coast of the USA. Is mackerel a common thing in your neighborhood?
Another like oily, flavorful fish that I like is bluefish, which I think is very common on the East Coast and is not really available at all on the West Coast.
My parents, my mom, who's from Baltimore, and my dad, who spent a lot of time in Baltimore, both used to talk about bluefish a lot.
Yeah.
Constantly talking about bluefish.
Why wouldn't you?
Right?
It's like how we're always talking about the communal mouth. Okay, so unless you're in somewhere with access to a mackerel fishery, the mackerel that you buy will probably be frozen, and that's okay.
Okay.
It's like, so like with shrimp, it's better to buy it frozen than thawed because you don't know when it was thawed.
Okay.
And mackerel goes bad real fast, as you may know from English literature.
Yes.
If you remember one thing from your English literature class, it's probably the thing about the spoiled mackerel.
Yeah. Okay. So when you buy
that and like a couple lines of Chaucer,
when you buy frozen mackerel, they're in individual fillets?
You can buy a whole frozen mackerel or fillets. I usually buy the fillets because it's easier.
And how do you thaw them?
In the fridge overnight.
Okay, cool.
I buy them at Awajamaya. They're from Norway. They come in like a airtight package, you know, like a plastic flat. What am I trying to say here?
Oh, it's like a vacuum sealed.
Like a vacuum sealed pack. Yeah.
Okay.
They look really pretty, even in the package, even filleted form. And like a pair of fillets is usually like $6.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And we just shared one fillet for lunch.
So that's a sizable amount.
Right.
So, you know, if you have a family of, I don't know, not huge eaters, but average eaters, you could get one pack for a family?
Yeah. I usually buy one pack for the three of us.
That makes sense.
And that's about right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm hungry, I'll put away a whole fillet myself.
Okay. And you eat the skin, right?
Yeah. This mackerel doesn't really have scales as far as I can tell. So you don't have to scale it. And the skin is totally edible. And if you crisp it up, totally delicious. It's not, it doesn't get like salmon skin because it's very thin, but it's good.
Cool. So are there other ways to buy mackerel?
Yeah. I mean, there's canned and smoked mackerel, which I have had and enjoyed, but like don't usually buy and don't really know much about because like I'm just not a person who buys much canned or smoked fish.
Okay.
I am not my dad yet, I guess.
Okay.
But I guess I think I'm going to grow into that.
I think we can all be confident that you'll get there.
Yeah.
So tell me about how you cook it. So you've thawed it overnight in the fridge, and then what do you do?
And then I cut open the package, and I try to touch the raw fillets as little as possible.
Because they're really slippery.
Because they're slippery.
Like more so than salmon?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure. So no matter how you cook it, mackerel loves salt and acid. So the way I make it most often is I will, you know, pat the fillets dry, like salt them a little ahead. Like I've gotten kind of into salting things ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think salting a steak ahead is a very good idea.
Yeah.
Like especially if it's a real oily steak.
Mm-hmm. I'm just carry on.
Uh-huh. And so get plenty of salt on them. And then just broil them until like, you know, they hit like until they're cooked through, which is really easy to determine.
And I'm guessing you don't need to, you know, smear any oil or anything on top of it before you pop it under the broiler?
You don't.
Okay. Do you pop it under there? I mean, I'm just going to keep saying pop it.
Just keep,
My puppet. Do you put it under the broiler skin side up or skin side down?
So I will start it skin side down and then make sure and finish it skin side up so the skin gets crispy. It is possible to burn mackerel skin, but it's kind of good even when it's burned.
And how do you know when it's done?
You know when it's done. You can either use a thermometer and probably like 150, 160 is fine. It's fatty enough that it's one of the hardest fish to overcook.
But you can
like nick and peek and kind of just see if it looks done.
And do you
opaque.
So when you say it loves salt, I mean, do you salt it like you would salt a piece of boiled potato, like a lot of salt?
Yeah, I think Like go full like, potato.
No, but like more salt than you would use on something
else? I would
say
more salt than I would use on a piece of salmon.
Okay. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah,
okay.
I think it's just really good that way. Like it balances out with the flavor. You know, it's an intensely flavored fish and like it wants that salt. And then squeeze some lemon on it when it comes out.
Yum. Okay. And I'm guessing that's probably what you do most of the time. Because
that's what I do most of the time because it's so easy. And it like, you know, it brings its flavor with it. It doesn't need much.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, there are lots of other ways to prepare mackerel, both Japanese ways and not.
Okay.
So when I was looking around for recipes, I found, we'll link to it, an Alexandra Guarnaschelli recipe for a roasted whole mackerel, which I think had fennel maybe, which sounded really good.
That sounds great.
You can certainly pan fry or grill whole fish, or well, you can grill a whole fish. You can pan fry fillets or mm-hmm. grill fillets.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing, escabeche or escabeche.
Yeah. I mean, I've had it. I feel like recently there were a lot of restaurant menus that had like mussels escabeche.
That seems odd.
It's one of those things where I like it in theory, but I would never choose to order it or make it.
Right. It's like when you cook a protein usually and then sort of lightly pickle it after cooking and
yes.
it can be served hot or cold or room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Spanish thing originally, but it's very popular in Japan also.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. In Italy, I think of them doing, I can't remember what you call that preparation in Italy, but I think of them doing it with vegetables. Like,
sure.
Like a pan frying slices of zucchini and then letting them marinate in vinegar.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah. Anyway.
Italian food's kind of good.
I know, right? I mean, I wonder like if there are a lot of people who feel that way.
Friend of the show, Becky Selinget, is going to Italy soon. I'm just going to announce that to everybody.
Oh, great. Okay, cool.
And she asked me, have you been? And I said, no, actually, I haven't. And I said, I'm just not really into Italian food. And I waited to see if she would buy it for a second. She did not.
Where's she going?
Cinque Terre. A couple other, Perugia.
Okay.
And one other place that I don't remember.
All right, cool. All right, have fun, Becky.
Yep.
Okay, so now tell me about, you know, specifically ways to cook mackerel in Japanese cuisine, other than, I mean, salt broiled.
Yes. So that's...
Which we just talked about.
Yeah, that is one of the most popular fish dishes in Japan. If you go into any supermarket in Japan, you will find pieces of mackerel fillet that, I mean, you'll find them like... unsalted, but also like salted and ready to broil.
Okay.
And the dish we made today, which I had never made before, but I'd eaten before, is called saba miso ni, or just saba miso. And it is mackerel fillets that are braised in basically a rich miso broth. So water, miso, sugar, sake, and ginger.
Mm.
And you just put the mackerel fillets into that broth and you make a pretty small amount of it. You put a lid on it. You let it braise for like 10 minutes and then you eat it with rice. That's
delicious.
It. It's so good.
Hey, question about cooking with sake.
Yeah.
So is sake like a wine in the sense that if you buy some of it for cooking, to have around for cooking, because it's such a typical like base mm-hmm. ingredient in so many Japanese dishes. Does it go bad quickly? Like,
so
or it, is it like mirin where it, you keep it in the fridge? And
it's in between. So it doesn't go bad as quickly as like a white wine, but it goes bad more quickly than a mirin or a liquor.
Okay.
So I usually buy cooking sake because that's what most home cooks in Japan do, and it's fine.
And how long do you keep it?
Oh, it's salted, so it lasts forever.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's really good to know.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I mean, yeah, you can't drink it, but
right.
you wouldn't want to even if it wasn't salted, but for cooking, it's fine. Like, I kind of don't buy the whole, like, use a wine for cooking that's good enough to drink thing.
Yeah.
I feel like I have, like, broken that rule so many times, and it always comes out fine.
I am inclined to agree. I will say that last night I was making cream braised leeks,
where
you brown some leeks in a pan with some fresh thyme, and then you add in some white wine and then chicken stock and braise it. And at the very end, you add some cream. It is so delicious.
Did we have that on the braising episode?
We probably had something similar.
Okay.
But I used a white wine that I had already opened and was drinking. And I don't know if it was the wine flavor in it is quite prominent.
Yeah.
And that was really, I felt really grateful that I had used a wine that I enjoy drinking. But I think that's not generally the case. There are usually many more flavors going on.
Yeah, like, I mean, this has nothing to do with mackerel, but like usually if I'm making like a red wine beef stew or something,
is going to cook so long.
Yeah, I mean, I will use a like not like a Franzia, but like the next level up of boxed wine.
Yes,
and it works great.
Totally. What a hot take that was.
Yeah, that was
scorching.
That was one of our fiery rants. Woo! I'm so proud of us for keeping the flame of the rants alive.
Okay, wait, tell me about these other ones that you've listed, these other types of mackerel.
Okay, so we're going to post a recipe, link to the recipe for the Saba Miso Ni from our favorite Japanese cooking blog, Just One Cookbook. It's so easy to make. It's so good. Shime Saba is one of my absolute favorite things. It is a lightly cured raw mackerel, cured with rice vinegar and salt. Mm-hmm. And that's really all there is to it. You cure it, you slice it well, and then you eat it as sashimi, or it can be used as a sushi topping. Mm. It's great.
Okay, cool. I don't think I'd ever heard of that
before.
Okay,
next time we're in Japan, let's order that.
What kind of restaurant would you find it in? Like an izakaya?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, cool.
And finally, mackerel can be used to make himono, which is semi-dried fish, which is fish that's kind of salted and left out to dry, usually like outdoors over for like a day. So it's not like a fully like jerky. Mm-hmm. It's just like much more dry than a fresh fish.
Okay.
And is a like very typical kind of old school breakfast food in Japan. And it's very good. Like it'll often be lightly grilled.
When you and I went to Tokyo, just the two of us, and we stayed the first night in a ryokan, and then had breakfast there the next morning. Was that himono?
That was probably not. I think that was like, was it like salt grilled salmon? Maybe.
I think it was mackerel.
Was it mackerel? Maybe it was himono.
Or like a sardine or something.
Yeah.
It was not salmon.
Okay. Yeah. Then maybe it was, because that would be a very typical like in breakfast thing.
It had a little bit of a dry look to it.
Okay.
And was delicious.
So I have a story about himono, because like who doesn't?
Oh yeah.
So. Many years ago, when I was still like calling myself a food writer instead of whatever this is, I got invited to like an industry event at Seattle Community College. And at this event, like some like fish producers or like fish processors and like, product promotion board people from Japan came and presented all about, and they invited like chefs and food writers and food people from Seattle. And they did a whole presentation about how they were going to try to market himono to the non-Japanese, to the U.S. consumer who did not grow up with this in Japan. And
you were like, good luck.
Exactly. Like they were like, so then they wanted us to answer all these questions. Like, which of these packagings do you think is most likely to get like middle America to buy semi-dried fish? And I realize I shouldn't use the term middle America. It's a loaded term. Right. So we were all like, A, this is delicious. Like we would eat this all day long. And thanks for bringing this stuff. And B, none of these, like, you know, adjusting the font on the packaging is probably not going to help.
That's so
it was
so sad.
It was,
and so
it was sad
real.
And like, yeah.
Wow. A good story.
I don't know. I feel like Japanese industries have gotten better at promoting Japanese products and culture abroad since then. Probably. like, I bet.
I would say select things.
Select things, yeah.
Select things.
Yeah, it's still weird that, like, everybody in America doesn't have a Japanese toilet because they are, like, objectively superior.
Matthew, I actually the other day went online and was looking up how much it costs to...
It's like $5,000, right?
Well, no, it's actually not as much as I thought. So the basic, like, Toto washlet with, like, mm-hmm, the basic mm-hmm. features, but we're not talking about the whole toilet. We're talking about, like, a seat.
Oh, okay.
So the seat with the warmer and the bidet.
Yeah.
Made by Toto is like $400 to $500.
Oh. Why doesn't everybody have
it? I know, because Americans spend $400 to $500 on things that are much less fantastic.
Right. Like, you're gonna use this multiple times a day.
It is hard to describe if you've never experienced it. It is hard to convey just how good it feels to sit on a warm toilet seat.
Right. So after we got back from Japan a few weeks ago, like, for about a week, every time I sat on the toilet and the toilet seat was freezing cold, I got angry.
After we got back from Japan, I went out and bought one of those fairly inexpensive bidet attachments mm-hmm. for my toilet. It was like $80, that brand Tushy.
Yeah.
Ash and I managed to not get divorced installing it, which I was really proud of us for. And even though it did require a trip to the plumbing store. But it's not supposed to. It's just we broke something we weren't supposed to break.
I think the worst
I love having a bidet attachment on my toilet.
But it's not a warmer.
It's not a warmer.
But still, that's great.
Yeah. Anyway, but
I
was surprised.
If I wanted to warm my toilet seat, like, I think I got stuck at, like, you know, like, late, you know, getting up in the night and, like you know, the cold toilet seat and feeling hopeless and, like, never, like, went the next step and was like, wait, like, I bet I could get a toilet seat warmer. I'm just realizing this now.
So, Matthew, you need to add a new line item to your budget.
Okay.
You know, go ahead, look up the price. I think it's $4.99 for the warmer and the like, the bidet. Like,
okay.
It's like the baseline one.
All right.
I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Could I
but
start
not
with
as much
something
as
that's
think.
Just a warmer, maybe?
Probably.
Okay, I'm going to look into this.
Okay. Yeah, Toto washlet. But yeah, if you want all the bells and whistles and stuff, like, you do have to pay a lot of money for that.
Yeah. So I guess like the thing that we feel most strongly about on the show is like
toilet
keeping
warmers.
That ass warm.
Yeah.
All right.
You know what? You know what's good for keeping that ass warm? Oily fish.
Oily fish.
Yep.
I totally pretend that I see the connection there. All right.
I was thinking of like, I don't know, like, I don't know.
All right, so mackerel's great. Buy it, eat it. Did I mention it's considered a sustainable fishery?
I think you did. I think you did.
And you can find us online at spilledmilkpodcast.com, where we'll link to the bidet attachment that you can add to your toilet. We'll link to like the full Toto washlet seat. We'll link to only toilet stuff.
To the Saba Miso recipe.
Uh-huh. And you can find us on Instagram at Spilled Milk Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/SpilledMilkPodcast. We're definitely like, I know we like glossed over entire cuisines worth of mackerel preparations.
Yes. Yes. We certainly did.
You know what one of my favorite is? Glossed over mackerel. It's like pheasant under glass.
I do think of it a fair amount in terms of Spanish cuisine.
Yeah,
I think we blew it there. But
I mean, we
I think
mentioned
we're just
the
gonna...
escabeche.
That's true. Anyway.
Every time I say that, I feel like I'm saying something I shouldn't say.
Yeah. Okay.
Abby Circatella is our producer. Yeah. I'm just dreaming about that warm toilet seat.
Yeah.
Daydreaming.
Yep. Thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that feels to your ears like a warm toilet seat
yes,
for your butt.
That's right. That is what we are.
Yeah, we are a warm toilet seat for your ears.
I'm Matthew Hamster Burton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Just making jokes about economists before we started taping.
That's what we always do.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.